You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K24. It's myself, Mamoonsi, alongside me as always, the ever well-prepared three-time NBA champion, Mr. BJ Armstrong, and our weekly guest, who is actually well-prepared because he actually shows up to the meetings beforehand, Mr. Scott Perry. How are you guys both doing?
But, oh, man, doing great. Mo, I love how you kick off a show, man. By the way.
I appreciate you. It's good to have you back with us. You know, the playoffs are right around the corner. I was looking at the schedule, and I realized that next week's show, we're going to be doing a preview of the play-in. The week after, we're going to be doing a preview of the playoffs. And then the playoffs are here. So I thought, what better time than now to talk about the awards for the 2023-24 NBA season. But before we get to that, there are a few little news stories going on. Scott, you know, first and foremost, I want to get your opinion. A player that you were very close with, Julius Randle, is now out for the rest of the season. How does this impact the Knicks, and how do you see them going on without him?
Absolutely a tough blow for the Knicks, guys. And here's why. Look, whenever you lose an all-star, an all-NBA player like this, it's going to make it difficult. Now, this team has performed very well in his absence. Jalen Brunson is having a terrific year. Probably he's on his way to being all NBA as well. But when you get into the playoffs, you need that reliable second option who can take over a game with his ability to score the basketball. That will be, in my opinion, sorely missed with this Knicks team. I do think they will compete and battle hard. They still will be a difficult out in a playoff series. But losing Julius Randle, in my opinion, definitely hurts their chances into making any type of deep run, which I thought they would have made had they had him in the lineup.
I think a healthy Julius Randle, a healthy OG Anunoby, I could have seen that team in the conference finals. But BJ, I got to talk to you about this.
Yes,
your
sir.
Good friend, Mr. Doc Rivers. We've got to have a serious conversation right now. Yeah. The Milwaukee Bucks have now lost this week. They've lost to the Grizzlies, the Wizards, and the Raptors.
Yes.
Okay. Now, with Adrian Griffin, they were 30-13 when they fired him. Now with Doc Rivers, they're 15-15. So Doc's now lost more games in a shorter time span than Adrian Griffin did. They went from being the second-ranked offensive team to the 16th. But their defense has improved. They went from being ranked 21st to being ranked 12th in the NBA. But that defense still isn't looking like a championship caliber defense. What's going on in Milwaukee? You had so much faith in Doc Rivers to steady the ship, and they've just lost three games, which are crucial, really. When you look at the Eastern Conference, they're now only one game ahead of the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are biting at their heels, two games ahead of the Orlando Magic. The Orlando Magic could snag the second seed in the East. How wild would that be? Wow. But what's happening in Milwaukee, BJ?
I wish I knew. And guys, as you know, Doc Rivers is he's a good friend. So but I have to call it like I see it. You know, something is going on there in Milwaukee. And, you know, we can, some of the blame, yes, you gotta take the responsibility when you sit in that hot seat of what's going on. They are not performing. And that's what I'm always about. I'm always about performance. Doc Rivers has yet, during this time period, which he took over the team, has not gotten this team to perform at a level that we can all sit here and say, we think this team realistically, you know, the way they're performing to win a championship. That's just what it is. Okay. This team, as is currently constructed, when you put together teams, sometimes things don't work out. And so the players have to share that responsibility as well. Also, the executives who put together this team. You know, you put together a group. You try to think it all the way through. They share some responsibility with this. So as an organization right now, the Milwaukee Bucks are struggling.
BJ.
No, hold on. I'm serious.
I got a question about that. But go ahead.
Yes,
I'll
go
ask
ahead,
you.
Go ahead.
Because Doc Rivers made a quote, and he said that they've lost these games on the road, and he's not happy with the travel staff. Can you clarify for the people what the travel staff is? Because previously in the season, Giannis said even the equipment manager needs to be better at his job. And now Doc Rivers saying, I hope he's not talking about the airline attendants on their private jet, because I'm not too sure what he means by travel staff.
Yeah, I'm not. I think Scott would probably be more equipped to answer that than I. I don't know what that means. I have no idea what that means. Maybe there's something new that I'm not aware of, but I saw that. But I just want to just say this, and then maybe Scott can give you an answer, because I don't know the answer to that one. Is, you know, because Doc is there he's in the battle as the, you know, the head coach. You know, that's a difficult situation. And whether it worked or it didn't work, you know, I thought it was virtually impossible, because you can't come into a situation with no training camp, no anything, and then suddenly think that that's going to work. And that's why I wanted to say the executives, you gotta, I don't think I've ever seen that. Scott, have you ever seen this at this level, where you're talking about a team that's a championship caliber team?
And then they had the coaching change in the midseason.
Like that.
No, I can't recall that.
Cavaliers firing David Black.
Is that in season?
But yeah, that was in season.
But yeah, but you know what? The difference was Ty Lue was on staff already.
Yes. That's what I meant.
So there was some continuity there.
Doc Rivers was a special advisor to the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yes. Yeah, but you know, but that's still not in the locker room. That's still not at practice every day. So it's a lot different.
So the thing, and thanks guys for clarifying that. That's what I was really getting at, is I've never seen this happen before. You know, in the NBA, you know, Scott and I have been around for a few years.
Just a few.
And you say, and we say, you know, we've about seen it all. And then you see something you've never seen before. So I'm just as interested watching this Milwaukee experiment as anyone, because it was like, wow, I didn't really understand it, but they did it. And now you're seeing that it's hard enough to try to win when you have everyone together, let alone bring someone from the outside in. And then guys, I remember this, he brought in a whole new coaching staff.
Mm-hmm. And if you remember the start of the season, they fired Terry Stotts from being an assistant, or they let him leave on the day before the season started.
So, you know, I would at least have thought that he would have kept the current staff who was familiar with the team and then just kind of rolled that out, or maybe brought one or two guys in. Maybe he brought a whole new staff in. So I just thought it was just so difficult what they were trying to do or attempting to do up there. So I should not be surprised. In spite of all that, you know, I always, you know, say this is a dysfunctional league. Scott knows that's kind of like my thing. This is a dysfunctional league ran by dysfunctional people, played by dysfunctional players. And whoever can function in this dysfunction will probably be crowned champion this year. But this situation was like beyond anything I've ever seen. And I think it's reflecting of what's going on there.
You know, guys, I am now officially concerned with the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, when we do our rankings.
Welcome aboard.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, and I was guilty of holding on to them even after this unique coaching change, because I have an extreme belief in Giannis Antetokounmpo. Just how driven he is as a player, and I just, you know, thought he could overcome a lot. What I am seeing now, when you lose three straight games to bottom feeders in this NBA and you're 10 days away from the playoffs starting, it's an identity crisis, if you ask me. Who is this team? They don't know. And so when you start, you know, you talked about, you know, Doc talking about the travel party not being as sound or professional. I forget the exact, you may have the quote,
travel crew is what he said.
Travel crew.
What is that?
Look, the travel crew is your players, coaches, support staff, medical staff. You know, you're traveling 60 folks, you know, a couple PR people and probably, you know, two or three of your media people there. But it's unique for a coach to verbalize that in the press conference
if that's a reason as to why they're losing some of these games. I'm a fan of Doc as well, but I did not particularly think that that was a good thing for him to do. Now he's living that experience, but in my experience, that's something you deal with.
The quote is outrageous.
Individual groups, not part. Exactly. You know, what was the exact
quote? He said, the quote is so outrageous because this quote screams to me that I know we're not winning this year, but give me a chance for next year. This is what it says. He says, Doc Rivers says, you know, it's funny. I've actually been sitting back and watching everything, not just our players, but our travel crew, everything. I've made a lot of notes. I will say that. I won't share that, but we don't bring the necessary professionalism, seriousness on the road. And that's something we can fix, and that's something we're going to have to fix. So how about this, Doc Rivers? Instead of sitting back and taking notes, you actually put some stuff into the action because the playoffs are around the corner. And then he says, I won't share that, and then proceeds to call his own team and own staff unprofessional. Awful. Anyway, moving on, over to the Western Conference. Scott, you were right last week when you said that the Rockets were not going to overtake the Warriors. The Warriors absolutely destroyed them the other night and put their play in. Okay,
can I take my victory lap?
Go
like
ahead.
You normally do? Like you normally do.
Go ahead. This is why I'm giving you the layup. I'm giving you the assist right now.
Exactly.
But the Warriors, when you look at the numbers, since January 30th, they are second best in the league when it comes to their record, fifth best in the league when it comes to defensive rating. The Jackson Davis and Draymond front court has been fantastic. Do you guys believe the Warriors are capable of causing an upset in the first and the second round?
Capable? Yes. To answer the question directly. But do I think it's likely? That's another question. See, here's the tough thing. If the standings stay as they are right now, and they're in the 10th spot and the Lakers are in the 9th spot, boy, that's going to be a tough, tough matchup for them because, again, one of my biggest concerns for this Warriors team is the lack of size. And who's going to guard Anthony Davis in that one game on the road in Los Angeles? I mean, are they capable of going in there and upsetting the Lakers there? Yes, of course they're capable. But the way both teams are going right now and how they match up in that playoff type of game, I would be concerned. But let's, for the sake of the question, assume that they're able to get by that team, and then now they got to go on the road and play the loser of Sacramento and New Orleans. I think they can go beat New Orleans because New Orleans is nosediving at the wrong time. I mean,
they've lost four straight right now.
They had a 6-game homestand where they had a chance to ascend to 4. Now they have descended to 7 with a chance to maybe fall back to 8 or 9. They were 1-5 at home.
I'm going to share this with the listeners.
Okay.
BJ called me the other day and he said 2 sentences and then hung up the phone. He said, I'm done with the Pelicans and I'm done with the Bucks. And that was the whole conversation.
Oh, that was a private conversation.
Exactly. I had to share it. I had to let them know because everyone was getting onto you in the comment section for when you said that the Pelicans were a top 5 contender. So I just had to let them know that BJ also recognizes their bad run of form.
So if the Golden State was to somehow get by those and get into the tournament as the AC, more than likely they're looking at Denver or Minnesota.
Tough.
Shaping up. And that size that they can't come back with. Minnesota's the top defensive team in the league. And then, you know, we talk about Nikola Jokic every week, it seems like, and then the defending champ. So it would seem very difficult to me for them to, if they're able to get into the playoffs, I think would be a big accomplishment in itself. But to get past that first round against one of those two teams, I would not favor them doing that.
Well, I look forward to seeing those playing games because we've seen a Lakers-Warriors playing before, and that was an iconic game. And so I can't even imagine how many people are going to tune in for part two this year. But it's time to get into the awards section of the show, and we're going to dive in at the deep end with the MVP conversation. We're just doing a top three today. From 3-1, BJ. Not from 1-3, from 3-1, if you may please. But Scott, you can start us off with your top three MVP candidates.
Well, I might create a little stir here today because we had this conversation, was it a week or two ago?
Yep.
About 2 weeks ago, I believe.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago.
My top three are the same, but the order is a little bit different.
Okay, okay.
So I had to move Shea down to number three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, we're going all the way to the finish line. I know he's been out a little bit here as of late, so that has slowed his momentum down just a touch for me. Doesn't detract from what he's accomplished this year, but I'm gonna put him at three. And you know what I'm gonna put at two? I'm gonna put Nikola Jokic now at two. I can't believe I said it. Now I think he's gonna win it. I do think he's gonna win it. But for me, I'm gonna put him at number two right now. And I gotta give credit where credit's due. Friend is down there, you know, riding high with the women's Hawkeyes right now. Luka Doncic, man, is still in the show. Mm-hmm. And he's winning. See, and he's a game or two out of the fourth spot. So you get one of those top four spots for me, and given what he's done from a historical standpoint with his numbers, I'm going to give Luka Doncic his first MVP. So
I like it. So
I kicked it off.
For me, if you want my order, last time we did this, all the Dallas fans got mad at me because I didn't even have Luka in the top three because they were eighth or ninth last time we did this. Now, they're fifth. They're two games behind fourth. Mm-hmm. If the Mavericks can get to fourth in the West, Luka Doncic wins MVP for me.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have home court advantage in the first round, unless there are extenuating circumstances like the year where Jokic won without Jamal Murray or Michael Porter Jr., I understand. The Mavericks they've had injury problems. They've been a bit healthier though. But you have to have home court. You've got to be a top four seed to win MVP, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So if Dallas gets top four, I'm giving it to Luka. If not, I'm giving it to Shea, and then I'll slot the Joker in. You can fit whichever order you want. I think the reason why I have Shea over Jokic right now is because OKC have lost the last three games, I think, but he's not been there. Yes. He's not been available. Right. So I can't put the loss on him, you know, for not being there. And also, the Nuggets have lost a couple games late in the season here where Jokic has played and Jamal Murray hasn't been there. And that's really where, I know no one really criticizes Jokic ever, but that's really where an MVP is supposed to step up and lead their team, not just have the excuse of, oh, Jamal Murray's not there. That's why Denver lost. Because they've had a couple matchups where I've watched, you know, in recent weeks, especially that 2-point loss against the Clippers. I was really looking at that like, come on, Joker. It's almost postseason time. They lost to the Timberwolves as well, who are also at the top of the standings with them. So that's why I'm giving the edge to Shea. But it depends on where Luka finishes because the numbers he's putting up are insane.
When Luka did that step through underhand shot from the free throw line,
unbelievable.
That turned it around for me.
Unbelievable.
That was letting you know, hey, now this is an MVP shot. Who's going to do this in the game?
Yep. So Mr. Armstrong, your top three, starting at three, please.
Well, I can't argue with the order and who you guys have. So I think the order, and that's Shea. But I don't want to discredit what this young man has done. I mean, this young man has, you know, I think they're currently now in second place or third place.
Mm-hmm.
In the conference, and they've done that all year. So I want to make sure that I don't just overlook his excellence and what he's been able to do, the leader of the team. So even though he's three, I just think it's just a three-man race right now. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, Luka, I have to give them credit because they are winning and they're performing.
Yes.
And over the years, I know Mo is definitely tired of Luka. Well, we do talk about Luka because we all love him. We all love his talent. However, we're just watching them really begin to, they've made some moves, and you got to give their front office credit. Give them moves. They've made some moves. You know, that was a very bold move when they got Kyrie, what they gave up. And when it's all said and done, the smoke cleared, they look like they're doing something. So I want to give their front office credit. J-Kidd has hung in there, down there. And both Scott and I, we love J-Kidd down there as well. Yeah, no and question. Give them credit. And then, so Luka is right there at number two. At number two for me, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But Luka is on the heels of Jokic. I mean, the Joker right now, it's a real fight. I think this is a real fight right now. I think it probably, if you looked at it from the media's perspective, it's probably a two-man race. But I want to keep Shea in there. And the reason is because he's been, they've gone above and beyond. They were in the play-in to suddenly they're one game out of first place. I mean, that's, I mean, wow. And he's the leader of that. So I don't want to discredit that and just take his excellence as like, oh, well, mm-hmm. and just say, you know, I expected this because I didn't expect it. So, but I have the Joker still there, number one. But I'm going to tell you what, at any given moment, this thing could change. This is a very close race now.
It's going to go to the wire.
I agree, it's close. Yeah,
I think it's a very, I think it's a very close. And listen, Luka is there, and Luka is right in the race. And I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be fascinating. And it could come down to the last week of the season or so on who's going to win this thing. But I think it's a for sure, Mo. It's gonna. The MVP will be in Europe.
Europe or Canada?
Yeah, but Mo, I think you make a very valid point too. If Luka somehow gets his team to the fourth slot, that may sway some of the voters as well too. I know this is our vote here right now, but when you're talking about who will actually win it, they get to that fourth seed, that could change the minds of a few in a very close race and give him his first MVP.
Absolutely. So another award that you know, Scott, you said that I like to take my victory laps, and I'm not going to take one right now, but I just want to remind everyone who last year said next year, as in this year, if that makes sense, there is a player who has a chance to win both Rookie of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year at the same time. So let's start with the Rookie of the Year, because I don't think there will be any disagreements on this, unless you're going to throw me a surprise. Do you both have Victor Wembanyama as your Rookie of the Year?
That's the only name I've got.
Yeah,
there we go.
And so, I mean, let's cut to the chase. I mean, he's been phenomenal. He's been as good, if not better, than advertised. You know, the only thing they haven't done is won in a big way, but you can't put, you know, all of that on him. But he has been a difference maker, especially on the defensive end of the floor. I believe the plus minus with him on and off the floor is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know it's a double figure. I don't know the exact number, but at last I
read, I think it was 24 last time I checked.
But yeah. He is, you know, had a phenomenal impact leading the league in blocks. And you might just end up putting his picture on, I know we're going to the next one, but, you know, but his defensive ability and, you know, obviously great offensive ability. But he's going to be a perennial all-defensive player as well go along with the great things he does on the offensive end.
So Wemby, Rookie of the Year, and then I think Chet Holmgren will be second, Brandon Miller will be third. I don't think there's too much real argument there. But I want either of you guys to tell me why Victor Wembanyama isn't the defense player of the year. Because every time I watch him play, I see grown men terrified to enter the paint when he's around. I see them turning down open layups. I see them go into the paint, kick the ball out, go into the paint, run out of the paint, just to try and not have their shots altered by him. I know a lot of people think Rudy Gobert should win Defense Player of the Year. So, Scott, who are your top three for Defense Player of the Year?
I'm going to give a couple names that kind of like were tied for, say, third, fourth, fifth for me.
Okay.
You know, obviously OG didn't have enough games this year. You know, if he had the 65 game threshold, I think he would have been the guy that would have been firmly on my list. But in lieu of him, Josh Hart has defended well on the perimeter for the Knicks. And I think he's been a big reason why they've been able to sustain the level of performance that they've been able to sustain defensively. I mean, he guards multiple positions at 6'4". I mean, he's really guarding 1 through 4 for that basketball team.
and the energy and effort, and he's rebounding at a ridiculous rate for his size. So he's someone that, that gets strong consideration for me, at, you know, Tyra Third, because I'm going to give the perimeter guy some love first. You know, Anthony Edwards is another guy. He has the defensive play probably of the decade. Not just the year.
And it's more impressive because he's carrying the load on offense and he's locking guys up on defense. Yeah,
yes. So I want to acknowledge him as a guy. He's an all-defensive performer, but he's not defensive player of the year. And I'm going to give Bam Adebayo a shout-out as a very good defender and kind of keeping this whole thing together in Miami from a defensive perspective. Now we get down to the final two. And you want me to make an argument of why not Victor?
If you can.
And here's why. It is Rudy Gobert. They're the number one defensive team in the entire league for the entire year. And he is the anchor of that defense. So to your point, in terms of impacting winning, when you utilize the argument for Luka being able to win it, got to be in the top four, my top defensive player of the year has got to be on a team that is winning enough. And like I said, top four level. And so now I cannot discount the best defensive team in the league. And he's the best defender on that. And look, again, we know the block shots. We know the altering of shots. But again, and BJ can attest to this, and any perimeter player loves playing with a big guy who will communicate and cover up things on that side of the floor. And he is, you know, because of his experience and his time, is further advanced in that area right now than what Victor is. So that's my reasoning, Mo.
Yeah.
And it's up for you too.
To be fair, because BJ knows over the years, I've made my fair share of jokes about Rudy. He has done a really good job this year when he switched on to smaller guys as well. He's done a really good job. And I'm not taking anything away from him. I got a question though, Scott.
Okay.
If you swapped Rudy Gobert and Victor Wembanyama right now, would the Timberwolves still have the number one ranked defense in the NBA?
Excellent question. And you know, those and those hypotheticals are often tough. What I will say is they would still be a top five defensive team, for sure. Rudy's a little more physical right now than Victor, just because of, you know, he's older, he's stronger. So I'm not so sure that he would hold on to one, but I don't think they would drop a great deal. So good point, good, you know, question there. But I still think that Rudy's experience, again, that's one thing you can't discount. Victor does so many things, you know, off of instinct and just natural ability. And he's 7'5", and he's very agile for somebody that size. We haven't seen a 7'5" player being this agile. But when you're talking about a great team defense, and again, players, executives, coaches will all tell you, there's more to it than just, you know, being able to block a shot and having some of these instincts. You got to be able to recognize calls, situations. And I think I know that Rudy is further ahead in that department right now than Victor Wembanyama.
Mr. Armstrong, huge fan of defense, you are. So hit me with your top three.
Well, I was just listening here, and I'm just going to cut right to the chase. Let's just put the award in France right now. this is a French award, okay?
Yes. For the next decade.
Exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth. For the next decade, let's just put the award there.
Yeah.
This is the last legit chance that Rudy has an argument.
Yes.
Rudy has an argument. He's the best defensive player on the best defensive team in the league. And I'm not going to discount or discredit winning and what that means, because it's so hard. I repeat, it's so hard to win. And right now, let's just say for the sake of this year, because every year after this, it's going to be Wembanyama. And it could easily be Wembanyama this year. Yeah. And the only reason it's not Wembanyama is because they, talking about the Spurs, have elected not to allow him to play more.
That's a fact. That's okay. They play some weird lineups around him.
Okay. And that's the only reason. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He is so good, guys, Wembanyama, that he is forcing us, and we know, I think they are, I think they've only won like about 19 or 20 games this year.
19 games but right now.
We're still on a 19-win team. We're still saying this guy may be defensive player of the year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no.
So he is that good. He's forcing us to look at the game a little different. We know if he would play 30 to 35 minutes a night, what that would mean. We know right now, if anyone has a chance, it better be this year. Because for the next decade, it's going to say Wembanyama, let's just keep it in France just to like cut down on cost of shipping the trophy over here. Just keep it there.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And just say that's it's a French award. Okay?
Shall I tell you
that's
what? Shall I tell you what, BJ?
Go ahead.
I'm super, super, super excited to see the Wemby and Rudy front court at the Olympics this summer.
Oh, I was just going to go there, Mo.
In France.
Oh, man. No question.
You guys got to pull up.
Yeah, exactly.
We got to be in the building for that.
There's no question about that. You know, and a big thing that he does, I mean, better than Rudy already right now, but again, it will just be enhanced the stronger he gets and the more aware he gets of all of the personnel in the league, is his switchability. We're talking about a 7'5 guy that can keep any of the perimeter guys pretty much in front of him. Because he has the ability to space them. So, and then with his extremely long reach, can still contest any jump shot they may take and block a lot of them. So, you know, once he gets a tad stronger, I agree with BJ. The war's probably going to stay in. They probably could cement a statue over there in France. And it says MVP and then just add the year as it goes on for the next decade.
Okay. Now, although, as BJ pointed out, Wemby's been on a minutes restriction. He's not been allowed to play all these minutes. And the Spurs have not been trying to win. I think it's fair to say that this season. Despite all of that, Victor Wembanyama has still blocked almost 100 more shots than Rudy Gobert. Mm-hmm. Just think about that for a second. He's averaging 3.5 blocks per game. No one else in the league is even averaging 3.
Well, you know, part of that too, Mo, the porous defense.
You're going to say the guards can't guard no one. So
it's a freeway to the rim. He's probably got more opportunities.
I hear it.
Because Minnesota, look, Kyle Anderson is a good defender on the perimeter. Jay McDaniel is a good perimeter on the defender. We talked about Anthony Edwards.
Yep.
They got a stout perimeter defensive team that's not even getting to Rudy. You know, when you got the offensive players aren't getting to Rudy as much.
BJ, if you had to pick a third player to be in third position, who would you have on your list?
As a defensive? You know, I would probably say Anthony Davis.
Mm-hmm. And he's been healthy this season, man. Shout out to Anthony Davis.
I would probably say Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis has really done a nice job. You know, I get a chance to watch him a lot living out here in L.A. But overall, I think he's done a really nice job kind of settling in and really anchoring this defensive team out here in L.A. So I would say Anthony Davis would probably be third for me as another name. See,
he's played 72 games. I'm in absolute shock at that alone. Do you know who I have third on my list? And everyone's going to call me super biased. Everyone's going to call me biased when I say this.
Oh, I know you're going.
Who have I got, Scott?
Somebody on the Celtics.
Of course. But who Derek on the Celtics?
White. Derek
White. Of
course. White. Exactly.
Derek White. Hey,
Mo, so I feel good. You know, I've been working with you long enough now. I'm figuring
we
out.
We in sync, brother. We exactly in sync. Derek White has blocked more shots this season than Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's blocked more shots than Bam Adebayo. And there's a whole list of players that I could read out to you that the 6'4 guard is blocking more shots than. And it's not just other guards he's blocking. I see him blocking big fellas as well. So I want to show some love to Derek White because he's been amazing. Yeah. And if you look at the Celtics numbers, by the stats, if people want to go by the stats, not that I particularly care, but he is their most impactful player in terms of when he's available and when he's not available. He is making the biggest difference on that team. But that takes me on nicely to the Coach of the Year award.
Okay.
Who do you guys have in your top three?
I'm going to start at number three. I'm going to go with J.B. Bickerstaff. Here's why. Cleveland Cavaliers currently sit in third place. They've had long-term injuries to Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley, but he still kept that group together. You know, they brought in a couple of good role players in the offseason with Georges Niang and
Max Strus.
And he has figured out a way and found a way to keep this team winning and not fall into any great laws while dealing with these long-term injuries to all-star players. Both of his guards have been all-stars. And then Evan Mobley is one of your top young big people in the league. So I've got to give him a lot of credit. It's under the radar. Sure, I don't know how many people are going to give him that type of recognition, but that's the kind of thing I've always looked for in the front office. I want to see who's doing the most in adverse situations. And he's done a terrific job of that, I think, this year.
That's a fantastic, fantastic shout. Who's second place on your list?
I'm going to have to go with Mark Dagnall of the OKC Thunder. He's taken a young team and kept him up at the top three position in the Western Conference the entire season. You know, a lot of people would think they're ahead of schedule in doing so. Having a MVP candidate in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander doesn't hurt, but he's done a nice job, and he's done a nice job utilizing his bench throughout the year and pushing the right buttons. And they stay true to the way they want to play. They want to play up-tempo. They want to shoot a lot of threes, and he's managed that well. So I've got to give him credit, and again, winning matters is important. And I'm going to give you a surprise candidate as my number one candidate. And I talked about him probably earlier in the year. But that's one Jamal Mosley at the Orlando Magic. What he has done over the last few years is people don't realize how difficult it is to take a really young team, 1 through 15. They had a couple of veterans on the team, but for the most part, a very young team, go through all the growing pains, hold guys accountable, and not lose them, and now turn them around into a threat, a legitimate threat, and probably first round, hosting the first round home playoff series.
Let me tell you this, though. They're two games behind the Bucks for second place in the East.
Yes.
They have two games against the Bucks coming up next week.
Mm-hmm.
If they win those games... And bear in mind, right, they've also got the Hornets and the Bulls, which are two very winnable games, right? So they win those two, they're going to be tied in the win column. And if they can hold the Bucks and hand them two more losses and the Magic finish second,
this is
unbelievable.
Believable. If they finish second, then I think Scott, he will open up the national voters' eyes and he should get strong consideration to really win this award. But he's done a phenomenal job. I love how the accountability he brings to that team, those young guys. He never buries any young player. A young player can be going through a tough stretch. Okay, he holds him accountable. He may cut his minutes, may limit his opportunities in short time, but he brings him back.
He's managed Jonathan Isaac's minutes really well. The way he's able to make a defensive contribution in limited minutes because of his injuries has been fantastic. And my favorite part about the Magic this season, I don't know if you guys have heard it, the theme song. Do you guys know the Orlando Magic theme song that they play when they win?
I do not.
Oh, you guys need to go on TikTok. They have this music that they play when the Magic win a game. But they put the funniest videos in the world over the music. I'm going to send it to you guys because every time the Magic win, I know I'm going to go on to TikTok and laugh for about 10 minutes straight. It's Orlando Magic, Orlando Magic, ooh. And then it's crazy. Anyway. Back to the coach of the year. I can't disagree. We talk about Luka. If he comes top four in the West, he should be MVP. Well, let's apply that same logic to Jamal Mosley. BJ, who's your top three coaches this season for coach of the year?
Well, first, Scott made a really good point with JB Bickerstaff, and I thought those were excellent points. But in continuing with the theme, my third guy was Jamal Mosley on my list.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's been able to do for all the reasons you guys have mentioned, they've had an excellent year, and Jamal Mosley has done a terrific job coaching these young players and bringing them along. And they're playing not only meaningful games now; they're in the race. Okay, they are
yes,
in the race. So I want to make sure I give a shout out to Jamal Mosley. here. I always pronounce his name wrong. Mark, what it?
Dagnall.
Right? Okay. So, you know, I think he will probably win it this year, Coach of the Year. But he, what they've been able to do, listen, I can't, in recent times, you know, a team that's playing at this level, who was just in the play-in just a year ago, and suddenly now they're right in the, you know, they're in, you know, in first place virtually for a large portion of the year in the Western Conference. And then, Mo, you will appreciate this, who I think will be Coach of the Year, okay? Is our guy Joe Mazzulla.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Coach, can I just say, by the way, before we get into this, coach of the regular season.
The season.
When
yes.
the playoffs come around, yes. I ain't going to be so
and,
friendly.
And, you know, they've quietly gone about their business. I don't know how they've quietly gone about their business, but they've been in first place for the entire year. Yes. Mm-hmm. They've.
Should I help you here, BJ?
No, all of us understand. Yes, and then I'm going to turn it over to you. All of us understand how difficult it is to coach with expectations. Okay, the other two guys, you know, we didn't know what to expect, right? But he has met the expectations. Porzingis has been a terrific fit with this group. And it's a regular season award, and I want to give them the regular season. However, the true test will be in the postseason. And that's going to be where everyone is going to, in my opinion, earn their stripes. So I want to give it up to them. I think they've, what, lost 16 or 17 games or something this year. I mean, they lost two games in Atlanta, and the world was coming down to all my friends who are Celtics fans. The world, when they lost a couple.
Okay.
I think Joe Mazzulla, but I think okay, the coach from OKC will probably win it, but I want to give a shout out to Joe Mazzulla.
I think for me, obviously, JB Bickerstaff and Jamal Mosley, fantastic. And I hadn't looked at the standings in that level of detail before realizing that Orlando could finish second before I made my list. But on my list, what I wrote down is I had Chris Finch at third because the Timberwolves looked like they'd made one of the worst trades of all time. And this season, he managed to turn it around. And they've had a bunch of injuries as well. Then Mark Dagnall at two and Joe Mazzulla at one. The reason why I have Joe Mazzulla at one is they have the best offensive rating of all time. They have the third best net rating of all time. Not this season, of all time. Any season ever. They're the best true shooting percentage of any team ever. They're first in the NBA in three-pointers. They're third in the NBA in defensive rating. First 60-win Celtics team since 2009. But the part that's most impressive to me, the starting five, do you know how many games that they've actually played together? The starting five of Porzingis, Tatum, Brown, Holiday, White. How many games have they played together?
Probably in the 30s.
35 games.
Yep.
But yet they've managed to win 62 games in the season already. Mm-hmm. And so for me, the way that he's been able to manage Porzingis' injuries that he's been plagued with throughout his career, so he should hopefully be set up for a playoff run, the way he's managed Al Horford's minutes as he seems timeless, but as he's getting older. But what's most impressed me is, BJ, you know how angry I used to get with the insistence of three-point shooting. And don't get me wrong, they still do that. But this season he's thrown in, hey, Porzingis, he's 7 foot tall. If you've got a mismatch, we're going to go to you down low on the post. And then also on the defensive side, he's tried a whole bunch of different things. If you guys remember, what college did Joe Mazzulla play for?
West Virginia, right?
Mm-hmm. And they beat Kentucky in the tournament, right? In March Madness back in whatever year. It was DeMarcus Cousins and John Wall's Kentucky team. In that game, West Virginia played a zone with Joe Mazzulla, the small guard, in the middle of the zone, kind of free-flowing everywhere. He brought that to the Celtics and has got Drew Holiday playing in the middle of this kind of hybrid zone thing he's got going on. So he's been trying different stuff and not just running with what Ime Udoka did or what Brad Stevens did. And he's been trying to make his mark on the team himself. So shout-out to Joe Mazzulla. For executive of the year, I don't think we need a top three, but have you got a top one?
Yeah, but can I say something before we move
go
on?
Ahead, go ahead, of course. DMO?
Just as I thought I knew my man Mo very well,
you go and surprise me, putting Joe Mazzulla number one. That's anti what you was. Why jinx him? You got the playoff run. You never wanted to put the Celtics in the top spot, but now you're putting the coach in the top spot.
You know the vibes.
So now you are set. Yeah, you know the vibes. So now you are setting him up, championship or bust. So Mo, I'm surprised. Do you know why, Scott?
Because all of the things I just listed to you, the offensive rating and the true shoot, if they don't win a championship this season, that just shows to me that every single one of those stats means absolutely nothing. So if you want to win this championship this season, you got to be jinx proof. You got to be able to say, I don't care what Mo thinks or says. We're going to win this damn championship. Because it's never been... No, because you've also got to look at it, right? You've got to look at it. Yeah, you're the Celtics. The Bucks are in second place. Look at who they've just lost to. The Cavaliers are in third place. They're always injured. The Magic are in fourth place. They're great. They're very young. The Knicks are in fifth place. Half their squad's injured. The Pacers are in sixth place. They've been crumbling since pretty much the All-Star weekend. The Heat are in seventh place. They've been inconsistent with injuries. The 76ers with Joel Embiid are now in eighth place, which may be tough, but is Embiid even going to be fully healthy for the playoffs? If you're the Celtics and you don't at least get to the finals, I'm just going to have to be a neutral after this if they don't at least get to the finals.
All right.
You might see me be bold next season because my hairline will have receded from being so stressed out at this team. But anyway, I digress. Executive of the year, Brad Stevens.
We're going to stick right with your Boston Celtics. We're going to keep the jinx flowing. Look, the moves in the offseason. In all seriousness, look, the additions of Porzingis and Jrue Holiday in the offseason, I mean, enough said right there. Best record in basketball. Arguably the best starting five in basketball and bringing those two guys in. They performed, and only thing left for them to do is do it in the playoffs. So, no, kudos to Brad Stevens. Thought he did a tremendous job of putting this team in position to get the Celtics another championship ring.
BJ, who's your executive of the year? We just need one. You don't need three.
Well, you know, just to, you know, shake things up a little bit.
Okay.
I want to go with my good friend down there in OKC, Sam Presti.
Okay.
As a candidate, I agree with you guys. Listen, what Brad has done this year is, I mean, in the regular season, they've pushed all the buttons. They've pushed all the correct buttons, right? They've made the trades they needed to make. They've taken guys out of the starting lineup. The way they've managed their older players, Al Horford, brought in the new players, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, I mean, the big trade. I mean, you can just go on and on about their team. So give Brad and them. I think Brad probably wins it. But also what Sam has done, I want to acknowledge that because that's really tough. Mm-hmm. What Sam Presti has done with this team is really, really, I mean, it's almost unheard of when you go from that extreme to watch this team. And they're going to be one of the teams I'll be fascinated to watch. Because they could easily be a team that could lose in the first round of the playoffs this year. And I still would consider this a successful season for this group.
No question.
Because of their age. So, I agree with you guys.
And Sam was number two on my list if we would have gone, you know. So definitely, done a tremendous job.
Well, sorry, I thought you were going to have a third name as well, BJ.
This is just a two-man race for me.
Okay. I forgot a couple of awards. The sixth man of the year. Who do you guys have for your sixth man of the year?
I'm thinking Malik Monk, as long as he has enough games.
He's got 72 games right now.
Yes,
so he's
got 72 games. Yeah, Malik Monk. Been terrific. I mean, they missed Malik Monk right now. And that is a big concern for me with the Sacramento Kings team, not having him the rest of the way, because not only does he provide tremendous scoring, but he brings an attitude and a confidence and a toughness that team sorely needs. So for me, Malik Monk is my sixth man this year.
With it, you know, I wasn't sure if he had enough games because I know he got injured and he's going to miss the remainder of the season. At third, I have Norm Powell. I thought Norm has done. He's done a terrific job for this Clippers team. And number two is the big fella Naz Reid.
I really
like Naz here. But knowing now that Malik has, I wasn't sure if he had enough games.
Right.
Yeah, Malik. But he's been. I mean, he's essentially a starter for them. I mean, he finishes the games out. So he's essentially a starter for this team. And they miss him. So I think Malik Monk probably wins sixth man of the year.
I think he definitely is going to be rewarded in the offseason as well. And I know a certain team in Detroit will have a lot of money to be able to throw at him. So you guys might be able to keep enjoying Malik Monk as a starter next season. That's all I'm gonna say.
They say.
That's all I'm gonna say. Okay.
Your sources say.
My sources are just ketchup or barbecue. I don't know nothing about that. Anyway, most improved player, which I always struggle with most improved player because I feel like if you watch the games, we knew from watching Tyrese Maxey that he was going to become what we've seen this season. We knew from watching Alperen Şengün that with a better coach and more time on the court, he'll become what he is this season. We knew if Jalen Johnson got more minutes in Atlanta, he would become what he can become this season. So I really struggle. I really don't know how to judge this award. And I feel like some of the recent winners have almost ruined this because I liked when the most improved award was when a guy came out of nowhere and really stepped up. And then did they give it to Ja Morant a couple years ago? How are you a second overall pick winning most improved?
Right.
You know what I mean? So I don't know how to judge this board. How do you guys judge it?
Those are valid points. I think what you just look for, and I think what a lot of the voters look for is that big statistical jump too. And how much it impacts winning. Now, so Tyrese Maxey for me is going to be the odds on favorite for that because now that James Harden is gone, there's not a question about him being the number two guy next to Joel Embiid. And, you know, he made the statistical jump. His averages are up. His shooting percentages are up. And so I think, for me, I'm going to stick with him there. But I think you make a very valid point moving forward with this award. You know, if you could take a guy that's, let's say somebody's eighth or ninth man, and then the next season he comes back a starter.
Well, like Laurie Martin in last season. Points. Like that was a great award for him to win last season because no one thought he would get traded to Utah and become what he is. But before that, when Ja Morant won the award, when Brandon Ingram won the award, I'm looking at them like, guys, you're lottery picks, you're high picks, and this is what you're supposed to do. But back when, I don't know, Goran Dragic or Giannis or Siakam and these guys were winning the award, I liked that a lot more.
I was in New York when Julius Randle won it.
Yes. Credit to you, you know, for taking him from New Orleans and giving him a new opportunity and new surroundings where people have written him off. BJ, who do you have for your most improved player?
Well, you know, when I think of most improved, I love to see the players take jumps. And here's a player that took a big jump for me this year was Jonathan Kuminga. I thought Jonathan Kuminga was a player who was on the bench, was kind of, I don't know, in the 10-man rotation. And suddenly this year, he made a true jump this year. And he's playing really good basketball for a young player. And when I think of most improved, I just love to see young guys when they continue to make a jump where the coaching staff suddenly inserts them in the lineup and they respond. And I thought he made a huge jump this year. You know, one of the players, well, I mean, I don't know if it's an improvement, but I think we're beginning to recognize him and for what he's doing and his contribution to the team is Coby White.
Yes. That's who I had at number one on my list.
Yes. Yeah, he made a big jump as well, too.
With what I said about the expectation of players, I personally did not expect Kobe White to make that jump when Zach LaVine went out. Yeah, I don't know if many other people did as well.
Yeah, Kobe White made a jump. You know, when I this is kind of how I look at the world. I just love when I see young players just suddenly now they can take on the responsibility. Okay. And I thought he really made a jump. And then another player this year, I thought made a jump. You know, we talk about Shea Alexander, he gets all the credit, but Jalen Williams made a jump.
Yes.
In my opinion, this year. And those are the three guys. I mean, Tyrese Maxey is Tyrese Maxey, but those three players in particular, I thought made a huge jump. And like I said, anytime you can take a young player who's in your 10-man rotation, just a year or two ago, he wasn't even in probably their rotation, Jonathan Kuminga. And then suddenly now, he's one of their top three players.
He's only averaging six more minutes per game, but he's averaging six more points with those minutes. Yeah,
I think Kuminga's a tremendous call, and it really fits the profile of what both of you guys have described in terms of how you really look at the most improved player award and what lens you look through it. I mean, Kuminga probably's got to be at or near the top.
Well, those are the awards. But the real MVP, the most valuable podcast, is the Hoop Genius podcast. So make sure you subscribe across YouTube, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast from. Fellas, I appreciate you as always. That was a fun episode. Always love doing these. And then get ready, because the play-in is going to be here in a week. The playoffs are going to be here in 2 weeks. And before you know it, it's going to be the NBA Finals. And then we'll be fine to... I'm not even going to say it and jinx it again. Anyway. Appreciate you both. Have a great week. Appreciate each and every one of you who tunes in. Make sure you stay locked in. We're going to be here all week long with more from the Hoop Genius podcast. And until next time, you guys know the vibes. Get buckets.